Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass PNC, and I'm joined as usual by my partner in crime, Mr. Bennett Tomlin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Cass?
I'm doing fine. There's just been a lot going on in terms of the space in general. There's just, it's kind of crazy right now, but we're going to start with something that, in a sense, we disagree about a little bit. I think it's, you know, another fart in the wind in terms of cryptocurrency news. But you are convinced that this is going to set a precedent that will be remembered for a very long time. So we're going to talk about Ookie DAO. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. You know, I feel like an idiot regardless. Okay. I don't know. I don't know how you're supposed to say it. It's OOKI DAO. And it has been hit by the CFTC with some pretty incredible claims. Why don't you get into the exact statements that the CFTC has made and what they're trying to suggest it really is?
Sure. I think before that, I'm going to go a little bit over kind of the history of OOKIDAO, so we've got a little bit of context here. B0X LLC, Tom Bean and Kyle Kissner, launched the B0X protocol way back in like June of 2018. And this protocol was another cryptocurrency borrowing and lending protocol during that DeFi mania. And specifically, what B0X enabled people to do was margin trade. They'd be able to put up their Ether as collateral and get basically a token that represented a margin position in Ethereum. The price went up, you got a larger amount because you had 5x exposure, whatever. The price went down and you were shorting, you got all that because of the protocol. And this is eventually what they got in trouble for, is the CFTC thought that these derivative products they were offering could and should only be offered through registered futures exchange, through registered commodities exchanges, and through like the appropriate CFTC process. The reason I think this case is interesting, and the reason I think that this will end up being more precedent setting and more important for DAOs in the future, is because there's like two separate things they filed. One was the order establishing and then settling charges against B0X LLC, Tom Bean and Kyle Kissner, basically saying, y'all started this, pay $250,000 in fines, stop doing this, and you'll be fine, right? But the other thing they filed was a complaint, was a lawsuit against OOKIDAO broadly and the members thereof. And they specifically talked about how OOKIDAO was this unincorporated association where all the people who participated shared in the liability for the unlawful acts that OOKIDAO participated in, which was offering this margin trading. So OOKIDAO was offering margin trading without KYC through a smart contract. They pretended to be decentralized, to be enforcement proof, if you listen to their executives, before the transition to the DAO. But what ended up happening is the CFTC took a look at it, thought it looks like it should be a regulated futures thing, and is now pursuing anyone who voted their governance tokens in the DAO.
Why do you think this is a big deal? Why do you think that this is going to be setting some precedents that are likely to... It seems like you're pretty certain it's going to trouble the cryptocurrency community at large, and that it's going to cause a lot of DAOs a lot of issues.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things at play here. One is just, and like cryptocurrency lawyers have been warning about this like since the original DAO. Stephen Pally back in 2016 wrote a piece for CoinDesk talking about how do you sue a DAO? And his point was basically that these structures look a lot like things we've seen before. They look like partnerships, they look like unincorporated associations, and it's likely that the participants, if they aren't careful, will end up sharing liability like they would in those structures. And so I think this is going to be an important case for DAOs because it's a reminder that the pastiche of decentralization is inadequate to protect yourself from regulator intervention, right? You can't just give a bunch of people tokens, make them vote on things, and then do whatever you want and assume that regulators will not be able to pursue you. The other reason I think it's important is because despite them having already settled with Bean, Kissner, and with B0X LLC, who are most clearly like the people responsible for a lot of the governance decisions, for claiming that it was going to be enforcement proof when they transitioned it originally to B0X DAO and then rebranded it to OOKIDAO. Like, they were the ones behind this protocol and I think, are the clearest ones that the CFTC should be targeting, right? But they also, despite already having the settlement, filed the complaint against the DAO more broadly, and yesterday tried to serve the DAO by sending a message through the Uki DAO's website's help bot, like chat thing, and then made a post in the Uki DAO forum. This is the CFTC that did that, saying, hey, just so you all know, we sent these documents to your help chat bot. You've been served. And so 2 days ago, I was more skeptical that this was going to be important. I thought the CFTC was going to let a lot of the smaller fish who participated kind of go and just kind of use it as more of a symbolic gesture. The fact that they're trying to serve the DAO through a website help chatbot makes me think they're more serious about pursuing the penalties and things they discussed in the complaint.
I wonder, I mean, that seems precedent setting. I guess I actually wonder if anyone has been served through a help bot before.
I expect that that service may be challenged. Gabe Shapiro, who's another cryptocurrency lawyer, was talking on Twitter about how he thinks that service may not be appropriate. But if, like, no one responds and, like, nothing happens, there's a chance that the CFTC gets a default judgment against the DAO put in place by a judge because no one from the DAO will have responded to the service, right? And this is like the other tricky part, right? Is because like the CFTC does know two members and participants in the Uki DAO, right? Definitively, they know Kyle Kissner and Tom Bean participated, but they are not being pursued as part of the complaint and they're not likely to have the same penalties as discussed in the complaint. So like, in the order that they made settling with the CFTC, they agreed to pay this fine, to stop doing this, and to stop voting in the DAO, yada, 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 yada. But in the complaint, there's another thing that the CFTC is pursuing, which by my reading seems to forbid people who end up charged with this from trading commodities. So people who participated in this DAO, who voted their governance tokens, if the CFTC is successful and gets the penalties they are looking for, may be legally forbidden from trading Ethereum, Bitcoin, or other commodities ever again.
Lifetime bans. Wow. So here's a question, and you know, I guess I wish we had a lawyer on to discuss this with us. But I wonder if, like you were saying, if nobody responds to this and they get their default judgment, how would they go about actually making sure that that judgment was seen through?
I'm not 100% sure, but I imagine they would be able to identify many of the wallets who voted in governance protocols and stuff. And then it's a matter of subpoenaing exchanges and other entities, which may have KYC info and stuff like that, until you start to identify the people, right? And again, I don't necessarily know that this is what the CFTC wants to do. One of the CFTC commissioners, Summer Mercinger, a Biden nominee, specifically filed a dissent against this complaint and thought that what the CFTC was trying to do here was an overreach. And so I think there's a good chance that, like, your general thoughts on this is right. The CFTC wanted to get these two people, Bean and Kistner mostly, and are filing the rest of this as like a way to signal this is under our jurisdiction, this is important, and we can assert our influence. I don't know practically that many of the people who chose to participate in this DAO are actually going to end up in trouble, because I don't know that it's worth it for the CFTC to do that. But like, symbolically, now everyone in cryptocurrency is very acutely aware that if they have governance tokens and they choose to use those governance tokens to achieve governance, they are more likely to end up liable for the actions that the protocol, the DAO, whatever, are doing in court. And I think that that is a very strong disincentive to most of the governance models we've seen in crypto so far, at least like the token-based governance models, because it adds such an extra layer of risk onto participating in the governance process.
I think you already hinted at this by mentioning a certain word, but what is the reason that the CFTC is going after this as opposed to, say, the SEC or any other governmental agency? I heard you mention the word I'm thinking of earlier, so I suspect that's the reason, but
Yeah, it's because they're doing derivatives trading, right? Like, because you're doing margin trading, retail margin trading of commodities. And I think
futures contracts, though, you mentioned, right?
Yes, that was related to one of the charges they have, and that that's kind of how the protocol works at a technical level. And so the CFTC sees these tokenized representations of margin they're doing and sees them as like perpetual futures contracts, basically, that should be under their jurisdiction. I think you could probably make an argument that the original B0X token and therefore the later UKI token, which was really just a rebrand, could also be securities and under SEC jurisdiction. But like service the DAO offered is very explicitly like something under CFTC regulation. And I think I should really emphasize here that like part of what the CFTC is trying to show here, B0X was such a good test case for them because it started out quite centralized. It was a protocol with admin fees that allowed them to stop things, change things, run by this company in Georgia, by these two American persons offering this service to Americans that is not supposed to be offered, that advertised that they didn't do KYC checks, didn't do any of that, right? And so like at that point, it was like very clear cut, B0X LLC is doing something wrong. And then when it came time for them to do the transition in August of 2021 and to become this B0X DAO, you have these same executives talking about how this was going to make them future proof, that they would no longer, that regulators, when they came to them and told them to comply, they would be able to tell the regulators to fuck off because there's no way for them to comply. Look, we're decentralized. And so that narrative, that belief, that idea that you can avoid regulator ire by putting a very thin voting mechanism on top of it, I think has been pretty thoroughly disabused after this.
It is interesting, though, because I feel like, and I imagine there will be some people who take issue with this, but to some extent, Ethereum itself started out very centralized, you could argue that people could very well be prosecuted for this offering that took place, and then essentially future-proofed itself. And now none of these people, seemingly, we have no idea what the future holds, but it seems like all of these people are not gonna have anything charged against them or anything like that. And it is much different than something like Bitcoin, where you have one or a team of anonymous creators who have never been, nobody knows still to this day. There's all sorts of guesses and most of them are silly, including my favorite, but there's no real person to even try to prosecute with that. Whereas with Ethereum, there definitely was. Now, maybe that is no longer the case, but there definitely was at one point. So I wonder how that narrative is now shifting, if it is.
Yeah, so I think that like, pragmatically, practically, we can say that it is unlikely any of the Ethereum co-founders get pursued by the SEC for the selling of an unregistered security in the original Ethereum sale. We had Preston Byrne on way back, and he talked a little bit about how, in his opinion, you can make the argument that it was a security sale and that there was this bit of manipulation of the sale by some of these powerful individuals who were there at the founding of Ethereum. Hinman made the comment about it being sufficiently decentralized, which has been very controversial, and has led to a lot of problems.
It was not like an official statement.
Sure, sure,
I just
sure.
want to
no,
make
yeah,
sure
it was
that
a personal,
our audience
it was his personal stance. Yes.
Yeah, that was a statement he made at an event or something like that, mm-hmm. versus like something actually stated with SEC header on it saying like, hey, we see it this way. So that's the controversy surrounding that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good note. But I think pragmatically that the SEC has kind of basically adopted that as their stance and they're unlikely to pursue it. And I think like we've talked about on a lot of these episodes, cryptocurrency is supposed to be about building systems that are, at a sense, actually enforcement proof and actually regulator proof and are actually censorship resistant. And that a lot of our frustration comes down to the fact that so many of these things inherit that language without making an effort to actually achieve that goal. And so I think what we're really seeing here is that many projects, including UKIDAO, B0X, whatever you want to call this fucking piece of shit, took on that language in an attempt to appeal to this community, to these people who claim to believe in these things, and believed that that was a sufficient deception that regulators would treat it as if it actually was censorship resistant, regulator proof, and enforcement proof.
This brings up a point that I like. Again, I mean, maybe I'm pushing on something that we have sort of already touched on, but like, if we go back in time and we go to 2017, 2018, BitConnect also suffered from all kinds of these issues that you're discussing, or for that matter, what's it called? OneCoin? Was that
that was Queen? It was vaguely crypto related.
Yeah. So both of those used language that you would associate with cryptocurrencies, decentralization, high yield, like all these things that are very common in the space. But I would argue that neither one of them truly achieved either of those things. Meanwhile, when it comes to at least BitConnect, I know the SEC ended up going after some of the promoters. And we had the Texas Attorney General who went after the actual company. I don't even know what happened with the people who started it and ran it. I know maybe they're facing SEC issues. But again, why are they facing SEC issues? Why is that considered a security? Whereas this thing is a futures contract or it's a whatever. Like, what is the big difference here?
I don't know that there is one. And like I kind of said, I think that you could definitely argue that the original B0X token was an equity, right? It was this company selling this token to raise money so that they, in their very small and limited capacity, with admin keys that gave them full control over the contract, continued to develop and grow it, right? Like, there's very clearly an argument to be made to me that BZX should fall under SEC jurisdiction as well. Now, Uki token or whatever it is, obviously.
I guess the point I'm driving at here is, do you think this is like, I'm wondering if half of the story is about, you know, these cryptocurrencies doing clearly illegal things and having to face consequences. But the other half seems to be that regulators are just kind of like bobbing for apples. Like they're just going in there and trying to get a hold of whatever they can and stake a claim on it right now. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of semblance of, wait, it makes sense that the SEC is going after this, and it makes sense that the CFTC is going after this. It kind of seems like whoever finds it first and throws their flag on it wins.
So I think there's a couple of things going on here. One is that there is like this turf war currently going on between the CFTC and the SEC over who gets de facto regulatory control over crypto. Both will end up regulating different parts no matter what, but one is likely to kind of be the primary or de facto regulator, at least in America. This controversy has led to a bunch of bills in Congress. We talked about this a little bit when Nikolesh was on here. Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX were huge proponents of the CFTC being the new de facto crypto regulator. I tried to reach out to them to see if that is still true after this enforcement action, but if you contact their contact email address, they tell you to file a support ticket and they'll get back to you soon. And I didn't really need support, so I kind of stopped there.
I know why you're going through that. I just want to do a little explaining here, in that I think Bennett and I both suffer from constant frustrations when it comes to getting in touch with any of these companies. And it's not strictly cryptocurrency companies. It is finance in general. It is all these tech companies. They just...
Energy utilities?
None of them want to answer questions. None of them want to answer questions. I tried to reach out to the CDBQ. I tried to reach out to Westcap. Those guys decided they didn't really need to talk to me. Fair enough, but like, gosh, it would just be nice if some of these companies decided to open up and be honest a little bit. Anyway, apologize, please.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And so I think like there's this ongoing turf war. There's a whole bunch of money being spent to try to declare a winner. And I think the CFTC knew they had a really strong case in the first half of BZX, right? When it was clearly controlled by the corporation, they were able to get that settlement and they knew they were going to be able to lock down that part. So then they saw it as an opportunity because they could clearly show that this behavior was wrong before and that these people were willing to like sign off and say, yeah, this was wrong before. And that after was the same kind of behavior. They hoped that by like getting that agreement on the first half, they could immediately parlay it into the second half and gain a broader breadth of control than they could originally. And this is why you have like Summer Mercinger in her dissent to the complaint saying that like this is an example of regulation by enforcement. This is the CFTC trying to go outside of like their rulemaking process to establish a new piece of turf, of domain, and even makes the argument that like the liability they're trying to extend from like this unincorporated association, that their legal theory is based on a couple of like state level law cases and doesn't necessarily apply to the authority granted to the CFTC by the CEA, the Commodities Exchange Act, and even continues to go on and make two other points, which I think are important. One that we already talked about, which is that this would make it so that anyone in cryptocurrency is disincentivized from participating in governance, even if your participation would be to say, for example, vote for a proposal that would make your protocol more compliant, more legal, or doing the right thing. Making that vote would still make you a participant and liable, even if that vote, like let's say that vote fails, then the illegal thing happens. You're voting, despite voting against the illegal thing, could still be considered participating in the DAO and make you liable for the actions of the DAO. Her other point was that the CEA, the Commodities Exchange Act, already gives the CFTC the ability to pursue agents who were aiding and abetting the violation of these laws. And she believes that like Kistner and Bean and B0X LLC could very clearly be pursued under that existing statutory authority, and so sees the going after the DAO as a whole instead of just those key individuals as exactly what you're saying, the CFTC taking a chance, taking a stab and trying to get a bigger piece than perhaps they're supposed to. And they're hoping if they get it quick, if they slide in on this weak little protocol with like basically no total value locked that no one cares about, if they can get it here, they can kind of start locking that out in the bigger picture of the American crypto regulatory sphere.
Yeah, I think this is again, you know, we find ourselves frustrated with regulators. It's a common theme on this show. I think in finance in general, I get that they're in a very difficult position in terms of budgets and how effective they've been in years previous, which kind of makes them not as effective now. And I understand they're caught between a rock and a hard place. It's just disheartening when you see stuff that you kind of even want to be like, well, this makes sense. They're going after this really crappy, horribly formed, like unincorporated association that's doing all kinds of things that they shouldn't be doing. And you're still able to be like, but does this even make sense on every level? And you can't necessarily justify it. And we're on their side, like if anyone in cryptocurrency is, it's like us. So I don't know. It's it's disheartening. But I think what's the last question I have, I'm pretty much coming at this from the same headspace as our audience, hopefully, on this one, because I haven't been following it too much. What do you think is the best and worst case scenarios for the end result of this action?
Well, I think the worst case scenario is kind of something I already alluded to, which is that this becomes kind of the new normal and that the CFTC and later other agencies find themselves more comfortable pursuing DAOs and more specifically pursuing people who voted in the governance process for DAOs. And if they're able to get like the penalty where those individuals can like no longer trade commodities and things like that, that is a really serious penalty for some of this, right? And so like in the case of like B0X, there's like student blockchain clubs and stuff that had some governance tokens and participated in decisions and things like that. And so are you going to ban a bunch of college students who are doing like this experiment in on-chain governance from ever participating in cryptocurrency again, from ever being a commodity trader, from everything like that? And are you going to start applying that to a whole bunch of DAOs and protocols as you go down the list and you pursue all those individuals? That's the worst case scenario, right? Is that they really take it through to that full conclusion and go after even the smallest fish they can find. The more likely scenarios, which I think are going to end up a lot closer to the best case scenario, is that they got this settlement against Bean, Kistner, and B0X LLC. I expect that to continue to stand. The Ookie DAO was barely a going concern, as is. This was very much a forgotten protocol. I hadn't even realized that BZX had rebranded at any point, right? Like, this was not at the top of most people in cryptocurrency's mind. And so I expect it'll continue to get smaller and less important and more pushed to the periphery with fewer and fewer people willing to take their chances participating in it. I think that then we're going to see a whole bunch of arguments over whether or not the service was proper. And then a whole bunch of arguments likely over whether or not each of the arguments the CFTC has tried to make are legally appropriate. And I think there's a good chance we'll see some larger players in cryptocurrency, larger than BZX, that is, intercede in this case and offer to provide assistance because they are incentivized to make sure that this doesn't become the new normal. And so
we've been seeing a lot of that as well, from whether it's FTX or Coinbase, but a lot of these organizations have been both lobbying and putting up defense funds for stuff getting prosecuted against.
And so I think just very basically at the best level, this is going to, it's going to be a forcing function that's going to force a clearer answer on certain questions about regulatory authority and like regulatory jurisdiction between like the CFTC and the SEC in the United States. We're going to get a more clear answer on what the CFTC's current limits are. And I think that this may also change some of the lobbying efforts by cryptocurrency industry participants, because they may no longer see the CFTC as the friendlier regulator. Though, I do want to add that one of the main people pushing that has been Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. And the way they profit is by offering a registered version of what this smart contract was doing, right? And sure, Alameda profits a lot from DeFi and from this kind of same bullshit. But even when asked to describe that kind of thing, SBF has a tendency to give answers that make DeFi look bad. So it is possible that this will strengthen FTX's desire to have the CFTC as the primary regulator, if they think that it will basically force anyone interested in this kind of derivatives or margin trading into their platform.
Yeah, could be the case. I think most of cryptocurrency advocates they don't necessarily see Coinbase or FTX and Alameda as like the good guys. I think they just see them as people.
Rich.
Yeah, and providing a very liquid pool of money for people to trade with. Anything else you think should be added?
No, I think this is just going to be a really interesting example for us to pay attention to as this case progresses over what's likely to be many months to kind of, and like as we head into midterms and we see more and more jostling between the regulatory agencies, to kind of pay attention to that interplay, to kind of figure out who's going to end up leading the charge.
On that note, you know, hit the like, subscribe, you know, leave a review, all that. If you do each one of those, so we are announcing officially the Crypto Critics Corner DAO. For each time you leave a like, a review, or you sub, we will give you one vote in the new governance, the Crypto Critics Corner governance token, which will allow you to trade on Crypto Critics Corner exchange futures contracts for the Crypto Critics Corner coin. But that's neither here nor there right now. Just, you know, hit that like, subscribe button, and please, God, let the CFTC know that I'm joking.
Okay. The important thing to remember is that Cascoin is enforcement proof.